Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career, so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Welcome to the Weekly Squeak, your weekly geeky squeak with me, Christian Schiller. Now, something a little different this week. I'm not actually going to do any links. I have a lot of interviews actually to get through. One of the advantages, if you can say that, of this current situation in the world is a lot of people are suddenly very available, so I have a lot of interviews to get through. But I haven't actually done as much reading of the news, well, the technical news and articles as I would like over the past week or so because of this. So I did have a couple of links, but there was only like two or three. I didn't see much point mentioning them, really. So I thought I'd rather just focus on this interview instead. And if you like, you can see those links in the newsletter version of this podcast on christianschiller.com instead. I also did say a couple of weeks ago that I was going to try and keep this podcast a COVID-19 free zone. But an interview came up that was actually quite interesting and somewhat related and somewhat relevant. And this is why I wanted to get this episode out now as well, whilst it's a hot issue. So this was an interview I did with Quentin Rhodes Herrera from Critical Start. And it's an interview we did last week. Things have probably already changed quite a bit in the less than a week since we did the interview. And we spoke about the company he works for, Critical Start, and their work identifying, surveying, and combating the increase in cyber attacks and cybersecurity issues around the COVID-19 pandemic. So kind of sideways related in a technological way to what is happening right now and what cybersecurity experts are doing to help people as they're also more vulnerable working from home and there's more targeted hacks and things like that because there's a lot of people kind of in stress. So it was an interesting interview and I do hope you enjoy.
Sure. Name's Quentin Rhodes Herrera. I am the Director of Professional Services for Critical Start. So I run a team called Team Ares. We are both offensive and defensive security. So I have guys on one side of the house who do penetration testing and ethical hacking. And then on the other side, I have individuals who do digital forensics and who are like ex-federal law enforcement from the FBI and NCIS, all of that good stuff. So I kind of operate across the broad spectrum of information security, if you will.
Okay. And so what have you been specifically kind of looking at the past few weeks then?
So the past few weeks, we've been trying to work with some of our threat intel partners in regards to some of the threats that have been rumored around COVID-19. Outside of that, we've been trying to develop content that is not salesy. We're not trying to sell anybody anything, but give them advice on like how to train on your downtime, et cetera. And we're also contributing to Folding at Home with our Hashcracker because when we're not doing anything with the Hashcracker, might as well figure out some usage of it, right?
What do you mean by threats in particular here? I'm guessing you mean digital threats. So, yeah, what do you specifically mean?
So, digital threats. So, we know that a lot of domains have been bought up recently around COVID-19, like COVID-19.bz, et cetera. I mean, the list goes on. I keep track on a few people on Twitter who do this for a living as well, and they've been pulling out large lists of domains purchased recently for COVID-19, or has the word COVID or coronavirus or et cetera. We also use a digital threat intelligence partner who can't name for the sake of their own requests, but they have been tracking URL purchases and DNS purchases for quite a while now, and they have an extensive amount of recent purchases around coronavirus.
Do you mean this in terms of trying to spread disinformation, or what sort of threats are we looking at?
So we're not sure what the threats really are yet. So some of them could be being used as a way of getting ready for phishing attacks, mass phishing attacks, mimicking like CDC or the WHO or any other health organization trying to spread malicious malware, or try to spread disinformation is also a possibility. We don't have really good intel yet on what these domains are doing and what their purposes are. We just know that a decent amount of them have been purchased.
Is there, to help you here, obviously a lot of people are in a somewhat new situation right now. A lot of countries, a lot of people. Is there any kind of learning you can take from anything in the past to help interpret the data in some way? Or is this kind of a new threat in many different combinations of way?
It's not a new threat. I mean, these threats happen all the time. If you take when US reported that they were going to create Space Force, right? When that happened, I know people went out and bought Space Force type URLs, right? It's a common theme we find when there's mass amount of information being put out that's either national news or global news, where malicious actors will go out and buy these domains in order to eventually take advantage or use them for bad. So this isn't new. This is just new to me on a global scale. I haven't seen something so big, and I think a lot of people are kind of in the same boat, right? The last time we had a global pandemic that had this much impact on the economy is, to the point where the U.S. economy or U.S. Congress just approved a $2 trillion stimulus package, right? Mm. We haven't seen that in our lifetime. So it's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen in the next few weeks, especially in the United States with the stimulus package. Every year we see tax threats and fraudulent attempts via phone, email, snail mail, et cetera, where people are trying to trick people out of their hard-earned money from their tax refund. And now with the stimulus package, I have no idea what that's actually going to look like. I'm actually afraid that it's going to be tax. It's just going to be the same type of attack vectors, just on a much larger scale.
Hmm. And apart from monitoring domains, are there other things you look for, like Twitter bots or Facebook pages? I see on the website you also have sort of mobile security. So there are other vectors you look at as well?
So we do look at social media a decent amount. I spend most of my morning looking through various threat intelligence company sources. Social media is one of the most interesting ones, because you do see a spring up of like fake Twitter accounts, fake LinkedIn accounts that have mimics either professionals within high ranking organizations. I haven't necessarily seen that with this, but I have seen in the past with like the Space Force, people created fake Space Force Twitter accounts, just as troll accounts. But I mean, it's been used the same way for malicious activity as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there any, I mean, it's not really very easy to say, is there anything people could do, because no one can really stop people buying domains. But short of that, which is, you know, you can't stop something that doesn't exist yet, are there other factors that people can do in their own personal or business security or policy or awareness to kind of help reduce offshoot threats from the main threat we're all facing right now?
So I think, you know, in terms of cyber defense, right, the main thing people need to realize is that nothing really changes in the way we should approach cybersecurity. We should still approach it with the fact that, you know, any email that we receive could potentially be malicious, and we should be in one of those type of positions where we're questioning things that we get, right? Being a little bit standoffish in terms of who sends us what at any given time, unless it's verified through a trusted source such as, you know, PGP, pairing, et cetera. So, I mean, I think we still need to be very vigilant around emails. We still need to be leveraging encryption where possible, like VPN. Especially with everybody working from home, organizations need to make a huge move into having their employees using virtual private networks in order to protect the data that's going from this untrusted zone, which is the user, you know, the employee's house, to a trusted zone, the corporate network. They need to be able to lock that down and create these, you know, VPNs. And on top of that, layering multi-factor authentication.
Yeah.
I mean, we're using our Hashcracker to do folding at home to give back to the community. I mean, this thing has gone in just about 2 weeks. We're in the top 2% of all contributors. We do the same speed and destruction to passwords, really. If you think about it, we go through about 700 billion guesses per second on Windows password hashes. Mm-hmm. So layering on multi-factor authentication on top of your VPN is really the number one move people should be making right now, as well as trying to find ways of enabling their defenders, you know, the people who are monitoring their defensive tools, to work remotely and, you know, address alerts on the fly from, you know, without being at their desk or in front of the server.
I have sort of three questions came out of that. I mean,
sure.
The first one just direct related to what you're saying, ignoring the defenders, the hackers, the white hat hackers, the testers, etc., who kind of know what they're doing. I mean, one of the things you said there, for a lot of people, things like VPNs, two-factor authentication, PGP, these extra levels of security are something that generally are still somewhat too complicated for many people to be bothered with. And usually when you're on your corporate machine and your corporate office, it's just kind of set up. And then when you get into the home situation, of course, it's different. And I think this is where you know, on a very mundane level, I've spent all week helping people figure out how to use VoIP software. You know, and that's actually not even a particularly security issue. That's just a very minor kind of thing, really. And even though password managers exist and we have major tech companies pushing for forcing you almost to use better security, almost forcing you away slowly from using passwords. But still, these are mostly things that people like you and I really care about and will go to the effort to actually, you know, enforce them and use them. So, I mean, and we all know the human factor is usually the weakest factor in any kind of security policy. I mean, how do you think you can help businesses and their employees with that side? Just like making it so that it is this stressed person at home who's probably now got two kids at home as well. And actually focus on this thing that really doesn't seem that important to them at this particular moment in time, but actually kind of is, you know. And make it easier for them as well. Are there any recommendations you have?
So, I mean, I don't know about making it easier, and you bring up a good point. People are stressed working from home, right? Not only are they working from home and they've possibly never done that, but they're also dealing with, you know, an economy crisis, with a global pandemic, a lot of outside external stressors that they've never had to deal with before. I do know a few companies that what they've done is they've kind of converted a lot of their IT staff. And I know one company in particular took all of their pen testers and put them through help desk training so that they can help users that have never worked from home before, walking them through resetting their password, walking them through setting up VPN. you know, I think companies need to do their best in walking their employees through the motions, right? Because a lot of the times, like you said, this is not the foremost thing in their mind, right? Mm. They don't necessarily care at this very moment if they're going through a VPN or if they're using, you know, the best security encryption possible. What they care about is, one, they still have a job. Two, they're getting paid. Three, that they don't fall, you know, ill to COVID-19, you know, et cetera. So companies really have to kind of hold the employees' hands to a point, walking them through this in a way that's easy for them to understand. I think that's the only real way of doing this very easily. Because, I mean, yeah, I can write a script to VPN you in and set everything up, but I'm going to have to do that across how many employees do you have? Am I hard coding? Am I weakening security by doing so?
Patience and support is probably the best thing they can actually provide.
Yes, the human factor again. Yes.
Yeah. And I guess try to have policies that can be a little flexible within reason, like everything is at the moment. And then two other things you mentioned there. So I do know what folding is because a friend was sending it around a couple of days ago. But just for anyone who doesn't understand what is folding when you're referring to it?
So Folding at Home is a project that was started by Stanford, if I'm not mistaken, and like in 2000 or maybe even earlier than that. So what it is similar to cryptocurrency mining. We have a very powerful graphics, powerful machine with a lot of graphics cards, some Titan V graphics cards. So what Folding at Home does is we run their program and they send us work units, what they call WUs. And we simulate protein folding and we do it for COVID-19. We do it for a few others. We don't really get to choose right at this moment, which disease we're actually working for. They send it based off of the available workloads that they have. And we, using our graphics cards, using our computing processing power, we send that data back to Folding at Home, which then shares it amongst the larger, research groups, the medical scientists, the medical researchers, the people that are way smarter than me in the terms of this stuff. So it kind of gives us technical individuals the ability to contribute in a medical way without ever having to go to med school and go through all of that nightmare that I would never want to go through. And at the same time, it also kind of expands our own horizon. Before this ever happened, I mean, we're only talking almost 2 weeks now.
Well, in our parts of the world, I mean, obviously it was in Asia, but I think we all just kind of were like, oh yeah, okay.
Absolutely. I never heard of folding, protein folding or protein misfolding. So, I mean, when I got started on the project and I had the red team manager, spin up our hash cracker, which he lovingly named Cthulhu, processing workloads. I started researching what Folding at Home was, what the purpose was, what it did. And I saw things of like they created a computational build out of what the COVID-19 virus looks like. And I was like, oh, that's crazy amazing. What was really crazy about it was in the time we joined for about a week, the nonprofit Folding at Home had such a hard time keeping up with the amount of contributors. I mean, I think it's over 2 million now, but they actually had to get donations of AWS resources from companies because they couldn't handle the amount of attention that they were getting, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, this is a problem you're seeing with quite a lot of services right now, from services like Folding at Home that are obviously doing something very, very positive, to just the services people are using just to do something from home. They're all kind of getting inundated, but they're not necessarily making any more money to pay for more infrastructure. It's somewhat difficult. Okay. So then I guess when you were referring to hashing, you're also talking about cryptographical hashing, and that's what your systems are. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. We built the Hashcracker out for the sole purpose of trying to show companies how bad passwords are.
Yeah. For sure.
And how fast we can crack them within 24 hours. And some companies are amazed add some of their passwords.
It's actually, I don't, was it just you a few minutes ago? Or was it someone else who earlier mentioned to me that all the Bitcoin miners should be contributing to this right now?
it wasn't me, but I do believe that. I think CoinHive.com actually is donating a ton of research. I think they're number one on Folding at Home's website. I would have to look at that.
I mean, cryptocurrencies are somewhat up and down right now anyway, so there's no reason not to use it for something better. But anyway, I digress. Let's sort of wrap up with talking a little bit about Critical Start. You talked about pen testers and things like that. So yeah, on a normal time, what are you guys doing?
So our main focus, our main business model is around manage, detect, respond. So we have a zero trust model where in a 24/7 SOC, effectively what they do is they take in everything, all of your logs, every alert from low to informational all the way to critical, and they go through a trusted behavior registry. So we think of it kind of like going through and saying, all right, we know everything in this section is good, so we're going to go ahead and ignore this because we've proven it to be good. We don't know about any of this, so we're going to check all of these. And we do that with every single client. And as our trusted behavior registry gets much larger and much more thorough, we reduce the amount of alert fatigue that is caused, right? So I think on average, we're 95% or more alerting on actual events that need to be addressed. So that's the main core business of Critical Start. We've been around for 9 years, been extremely successful. Outside of that, you know, the red team and blue team, we do things from red teaming to password complexity assessments to offensive / defensive training, all the way to like governance, risk, and compliance. So helping companies understand what compliance needs they may have. How do they meet those compliance needs? Is it PCI? Is it HIPAA? Whatever it is, right? And then also a value add reseller, right? So we have intrinsic partnership with companies like Palo Alto. We do a lot of Palo Alto work, helping companies choose the best technology that fits their needs, instead of just trying to force a circle into a square hole. Mm-hmm. Is kind of the way I always look at it. So that's Critical Start at a very high level. I'm sure I didn't do the MDR justice because it's not my core focus, but it is probably the most amazing MDR I've seen. I've been in security for quite a while, and I may be a little biased, but
two things there. What is your core focus?
So my core focus is running a red and blue. So I've been doing pen testing for probably 7 years doing zero-day research. So just a few days ago, I released some zero days. I have 15 more zero days being released next week. These have been patched by the vendor. We're not dropping during COVID-19 madness. We're not releasing exploits that are going to cause more problems.
For those who don't know, let's unpack zero days. It's one of these things that people read about a lot, probably without ever really understanding what it means. So let's say.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So zero day is a vulnerability that the world does not quite know about yet. Mm-hmm. A vendor may know about it because we've told the vendor. A client may know about it because we may have found it during a client engagement, but nobody else in the world knows about it. So we go through, especially in today's climate with COVID-19, everybody working from home, we go through a rigorous process of making sure that both the client is patched and the vendor has issued that patch. Or if the vendor doesn't reply to us, we find ways of mitigating the risk for the client. But we release those really to aid people in understanding. I mean, if the vendor didn't patch it, then we provide information on how to mitigate. Mm-hmm. If they have released patches, we want them to update as much as possible, as quickly as possible. So we release those. That's been my core focus, I guess, for most of my security background is pen testing and offensive security.
Yeah.
I find it much more exciting than blue team work, but it goes hand in hand, which is why we created Team Aries, which is the combination of blue and red team.
And just so penetration testing, I actually So I'm half Australian and I lived in Melbourne in Australia for a long time. For some bizarre reason, I seem to know a lot of pen testers there. I don't exactly know why there's so many there, or I just met them. I don't know. So, you know, this can be people who in varying degrees go on or off site to actually sometimes, I mean, actually typically contracted by a company to try and find vulnerabilities.
Correct.
And on site, this can be. So I know one I met who worked for a local council there, where people were post-it noting passwords to screens and stuff like that. You know, that's a non-technical vulnerability, yes, all the way up to the or down to the more technical ones. So that's kind of their job. And he actually told me that police had sort of arrested him several times trying to break into buildings and things, and he'd have to present a letter or stuff like this.
Ever get a jail free card.
Yeah. What, when you refer to blue and red teams, what does that mean?
So So the way I see it is it's a partnership. It has to be, right? So I tell clients all the time, you can hire a pen test firm that can go in there, you know, destroy your network, drop the mic, walk out, and that's it, right? And give you a 100-page report and wish you the best of luck. What we decided to do from Critical Start is we decided to take a perspective of blue team is going to get better as red team gets better and vice versa, right? So if I learn a way of bypassing some technology, or I find a zero day that is not yet released, but maybe somebody else finds it at the same time and they exploit somebody who comes to our blue team, we can help them and we can educate them on the red team mindset, on our tool sets, on our way of approaching exploiting networks and people, right? Because like you said, some of it is non-technical. Some of it's tricking people into letting us in the buildings. Where the blue team can actually help us understand how they hunt us, right? And so that maybe when we go do that next pen test, we take some of that knowledge with us, we apply it to our pen test, and we can help our clients' blue team become even better. The same goes for our research. We're building out our blue team research as we speak. The goal behind that being, whenever we release a way of doing some red team activity, we follow up with a way of also defending against it. Because I don't agree entirely of just releasing all the ways of breaking into stuff without ever providing a way of preventing or blocking that technique, right? The same goes with the tools we develop, right? If we develop tools, we should also explain how you can defend against those tools being used against you. So we created this combination of a team so that we can share knowledge centrally and we can grow both of our expertises at the same time without having to work as a forensics person, because I don't have the mindset for that. But I do have the mindset of a red teamer, and I can help them understand what I would do, and I can understand how they would try to find out what I did.
And then finally, so what is managed detection and response? It's not your department, but you say a Critical Start is very good at it. What is it?
So we manage. So what we do is we deploy a bunch of endpoints out. We have a wide selection of them where we manage their antivirus, their endpoint detection response tools, and any other suite of tools that we support in our platform that we call ZTAP, or Zero Trust Analytical Platform. Unless they've changed the name on me in the last like couple months, which is possible. But what we effectively do is we, like I said, we consume all these logs from all of their hosts that they have sending data to our platform. And we go through, let's say when they're going onboarding, we go through, and some of that data is going to be already signed off as known good, because that's the only way we do it, is we say, yes, we do know 100% that this is a good alert, right? We know that this isn't a bad or malicious action. So it goes through our trusted behavior registry. The rest of that unknown, so maybe the informationals, maybe the lows, even all the way up to the criticals, we work with the client in filtering out to say, is this something that's expected on your side or is it not? And one really easy example is most IT people use PowerShell every day. But unfortunately, PowerShell blocks execution sometimes. So you have to use execution policy bypass, which will immediately flag triggers on most endpoint protection tools. we will flag that as a bad, known bad for your company, right? If we haven't already been told that, yes, it is supposed to be used by this user on this workstation. So then we take those that information, that user, that workstation, that event, and we put it into our trusted behavior registry. And so we will no longer alert on that again. But if another user logs into that machine and runs the same thing, we're going to alert on it because it's not a known good to us. So we're going to then follow back up. Is this actually supposed to be running? Yes or no? If so, if the user is supposed to, then we add it to our trusted behavior registry so that the client never sees it again. And one thing I find that it's actually more relevant now than it ever has been before with our MDR is we have this thing called the mobile SOC. So our customers can do isolation of hosts, quarantining hosts. They can immediately respond, review, and identify what we are doing on their behalf on alerts from home, from really anywhere. They could be isolated in a closet and still, as long as they have their phone, they can see what we're doing on their network to ensure that we're always following up on these alerts. We're quarantine hosts, et cetera. And the client can as well from their phone. So we've already enabled them to do blue team work remotely even before it became a necessity.
Okay. Thanks for that. That's a good thorough explanation. Now, the last question I usually ask people, but most of the time I'm usually kind of speaking to product teams, things like that. So I don't know exactly what your answer will be or if you can answer it. Obviously, at the moment, you're kind of busy with very particular activities. Casting that aside for now, what's kind of on your or the company's plans, roadmaps for the next 6 months? Like, apart from COVID-19, are there other threats you have on your horizon? Are there other features you're looking to roll out? Are there services you're looking to offer? That kind of thing.
So we are, from my department, we are releasing training. It's actually been approved for Black Hat USA 2020, but that may get canceled. So we're probably going to offer that training remotely for individuals later in the year. We are looking at offering other kind of blue team services and purple team services in order to kind of test companies' defenses and how they react to them, right? So how do their blue teamers work and how are they going to follow up and respond? Outside of that, I mean, the normal services that we continue to offer, pen testing, security research, et cetera, is always going to be our kind of main business model with Team Aries, at least. For the company, you know, outside of COVID-19, continuing to get individuals to sign up on incident response retainers so that when the worst case scenario does happen, they do have a quality company they can go to, as well as getting companies to move away from those SOCs that cause alert fatigue, that ignore the informationals and low findings, medium findings, and moving to a product model that is a little bit more aligned to identifying everything as much as possible. I think that's, you know, the company's main objective for the next 6 months, probably even a year.
That was my interview with Quentin from Critical Start. I hope you enjoyed that. Now, I have some new posts up on the website. By the time this goes out, it should be something, an article based on the interview I did with Hedera Hashgraph a while back. I should also soon have an article on using Swift Playgrounds, and actually a lot of other things in progress that should all get published quite soon. I'm running a lot of online things right now. I did an online stream last week working on the Ethereum blog. I plan to do some more soon. Also recorded a new storytelling podcast. Actually going to do some test recordings of another new podcast soon. And some new music and all sorts of things. So actually quite a bit happening. Sometimes I almost forget what it is that I have been doing in the week to tell you about it. Oh, yes, I remember. I also updated my One Day the World Ended roleplay game. So that's at onedaytheworldended.com. Hopefully that's not true right now. With some new rules for different sorts of play. So you can play without a storyteller or dungeon master, whatever you want to call them, or with. and also some example scenarios to get you started. So that's up there right now. And there's going to be a lot more to come very soon. Stay safe, everybody. Stay healthy. And yeah, keep an eye on christianschiller.com for any more updates. Sign up to my various social channels and newsletters there. And I'll talk to you all again next week with another interview. As I say, I have plenty to bring to you right now. So there'll definitely be another one next week. Until next time, thank you very much for listening.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.